but I want to understand feminism. I want to get it. I want to be able to communicate with you broads on a real level. So I'm like, what is the main points? What are the main issues? What are the problems? And the girls always like, oh my God, equal pay for equal work, equal pay for equal work. I'm like, cool. I don't want to work. Ever.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is City Lights. I'm your host, Lois Reitzes. Welcome to the Bitter Southerners All-Women Radio Hour. For the unfamiliar, the Bitter Southerner is a print magazine and publishing company known for diverse and stereotype-breaking contributions to the ever-deepening conversation about what it means to be Southern. Once a regional magazine, it now has an international audience and tells important, engaging, and sometimes funny stories about the issues people across the country face through a Southern lens. Today, we're joining with the Bitter Southerner to celebrate the launch of their all-women issue, an expansive look at the women artists, musicians, chefs, poets, and comedians whose work helps us imagine a better world. Co-founder Kyle Tibbs-Jones joins me, alongside my City Lights producers, Kim Drobes and Summer Evans.
Hi, Lois.
Hi.
Hi, Lois. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, Lois. Hey, Kyle.
Hi. We've got some powerful women in the room. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, so excited to have you here.
This is big.
This is huge.
We're about to have some fun.
Kyle, how did the concept of dedicating an entire issue to women come about?
Oh, gosh, Lois. Well, what we were hoping to do was to create an issue where we could lift so many different kinds of voices to talk about what it's like for all of us to live right now as a woman. I went to my partners, and I have two. It's myself, Eric Neesmith, and Dave Whitling. We're all three the partners in publishing company. And I said, I'd like to do an all-women issue. And they were like, 100%, let's do it. So because it's the all-women issue, I did, you know, I started that project and worked on it for months and months. But it just was important to me that we put something together, that every single thing about this magazine, this issue, was made by a woman. Every paragraph, every story, every illustration, every photograph, every comma, every edit was made by a woman. But when we announced that this was what we were going to do, the all-women issue, we literally could hear a cheer around the world. I say in my letter at the top of the magazine that our magazine is always a diverse chorus of voices. But in this one, we asked the women to sing.
The issue shines light on a bounty of incredible women, including poet Joan Baez, food journalist Toni Tipton Martin, writer Roxane Gay, comedians Dulce Sloan and Lace Larrabee, to name just a few.
Lois, when you read that back to me, I get cold chills. And I'm steeped in this magazine. I've been working on it for so long, but it still gives me cold chills. I'm so excited about this lineup. These contributors have poured their hearts into this issue, but we knew that there were things that we wanted to cover. There's a lot of issues facing us as women. And so we wanted to have a breadth of information and storytelling in this issue. And so we just started from there. So, you know, there's so much to talk about. But like, say, the comedians that you just mentioned, Heather McMahon's in there, Blair Erskine, who writes for Jimmy Kimmel, so many funny, funny women coming out of this region and ruling the world, you know. Joan Baez, I can't even believe, I mean, I can't believe that I'm saying to you that Joan Baez is in The Bitter Southerner. Feel really lucky.
With good reason. Singer-songwriter Kacey Musgraves graces the cover of the magazine. Why did you choose her?
Lois, I'm her biggest fan.
That's a good reason.
I mean, is it? I mean, first of all, Kacey is an amazing, amazing singer-songwriter. She is one of the most talented songwriters of our generation. I'm also a big fan. We just feel very blessed and lucky to have her on our cover. And the piece is written by Christina Lee, and it's really, really great. Y'all know Christina, right?
Oh, she is a fabulous writer.
Yes. This Kacey Musgraves story is fantastic. She just released a record called A Deeper Well. And in this record, on every single track, she digs deep. And all the songs are about, you know, looking inward and finding strength as a woman and as a person and as in a relationship and in this world. In these songs, she goes deep about finding that inner strength and being the kind of woman that she wants to be and not living life in the shallow end.
I'm constantly reminded through art that vulnerability is one of the most powerful things. Even like country music, like when I was going through like my last breakup, I was so sad, and it sounds really cliche, but one of the things that like really did help me get through that period was listening to like really old school country music that is super centered around being completely brokenhearted. And it's like, it just reminds you that you're not alone. Like, this is such a beautiful, unbelievable existence that I get to have, where I get to take these things that matter to me on such a deeply personal level. And, you know, I put them in these paintings or these songs, and then other people receive those messages and connect with them in a totally different way to their own story, their own lives. And then that energy is given back to me when they say, I went through the same thing, or like, I went through a divorce too, or like, you make me feel like I'm not alone. It's like, yeah, that's what this whole thing is about. It's like, we're in this together, you know?
At the very end of this story, I don't want to give too much away, but Christina Lee recounts her show at the Ryman, and at the end, she sings Too Good to Be True. I don't know if you're familiar with that song, but it's one of the most beautiful tracks on the record. And this makes me cry a little bit, but Kacey says in the interview with her that when that audience started singing those personal lyrics back to her, that she could not hold back the tears, but she was having a very hard time that first night as the audience sang back the lyrics to her of that deeply personal song.
Aside from Kacey, there are many other musicians in this issue. In fact, right now, we're hearing the musical duo Sister Strings. Kyle, what can you tell us about them?
We fell in love with Sister Strings at Newport Folk Festival. They joined all of our favorite artists on different stages, but they're fantastic. They live in Nashville. They're actual sisters. We're really lucky to have them in the issue.
I'm Summer Evans with WABE's City Lights, and this is the Bitter Southerners All-Women Radio Hour. That was Sister Strings with their track, Passacaglia, Feeling Good. We'll have more from the duo throughout the hour. Next up, each issue of the Bitter Southerner includes a list of favorites. The All-Women issue asked 10 media superstars, What would be the title of your theoretical book about being a woman in 2024? Here's what a few of them said.
5 messages.
I'm Elaine McMillian Sheldon, and I'm a filmmaker. I would title my book about being a woman in 2024, Quiet Power, because there's enough loud voices in the room and there's strength and subtlety.
I'm Jamila Robinson, editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit. I would title my book about being a woman in 2024, I Knew It All Along. Because every time I focused on the things that I truly believed in, that I felt strongly in my gut, the topics I wanted to focus on, or the decisions I wanted to make about my career, I've looked inside, looked inward, and decided to follow my heart and follow the things that bring me joy.
I'm Debbie Elliott, national correspondent for NPR News. I would title my book, Savoring Life, Centering Truth, and Witnessing the Edges Fray, because I'm trying to look for the good and true in the world while fighting the myths and disinformation that's eating away at the fabric of our society.
I'm LaGaya Figueres, senior editor for Food and Dining at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I would title my book, The Power of Me, A Radical Woman's Tempered Tactics to Drive Change in Divisive Times, because there are ways to challenge the injustices that women face without screaming into a microphone and demanding immediate systemic change.
I'm Erin Haynes, editor-at-large of the 19th, and I would title my book about being a woman in 2024, Y'all Ain't Gonna Believe This, because seriously, what year even is this? Look, time is a construct, but I also know I have fewer rights today than my mother or grandmother did at my age. I mean, sure, I can still get my own mortgage or credit card for now, but as a Black woman in the year of our Lord 2024, my access to the ballot box and my ability to make decisions about my own body are still being legislated. Thought we settled that in 1965 and 1973, respectively, but here we are. Listen, women are more than half the population and more than half the electorate, but we still talk about women in our politics as a special interest group. And when many of the political journalists, who are still mostly white and male, by the way, talk to women voters, it's about women's issues, as if those don't also include the economy, education, healthcare, the Supreme Court, or immigration. Is it any wonder that we're still here? We have yet to make this democracy real for everyone. And who gets to participate and who is a full citizen in our country is still, apparently, up for debate.
End of messages.
Hi, this is Holly Hayworth, reading an excerpt from Woman in the Woods, my essay from the Bitter Southerner's All Women issue. In our unfortunate fairy tale of a woman in the woods, Little Red Riding Hood thought to herself, "As long as I live, I will never by myself leave the path to run into the wood." But this cannot be our reality, cannot be the moral we are left with when the next woman is found. Throughout ancient history, the survival of our species has hinged on women's knowledge of forests, on their skills with foraging plants for food and medicine, their orienteering and navigating abilities. A woman in the woods is one who knows where a spring bubbles forth, where the cress grows. But this knowledge extends into the metaphorical woods we are always finding our way through. We collect information, make connections, listen for the stories that are true, the tales that will move our species forward, seeing clearly. It is a way of honoring and protecting life itself. The woods are our birthright, a place where we remember. Every patch of forest we can protect, no matter how small, is a place where we can witness and learn from the wild. It was the female scientist Suzanne Simard who brought forth the story about how individual trees support one another, how they send nutrients underground through the mycelial network, using interlacing fungal threads to nourish and protect each other, to send messages of care. Men need to remember what the wild teaches, too. They need the woods to help them see ways of being self-willed that do not involve taking away the will of other living beings. Ways of being self-willed that nourish and support women and the whole living world. My imagination flowers, and I grow taller like the trees. I will use my voice to share what the woods teach me. And so I kept walking my usual paths through the beeches, hickories, oaks, and pines as early spring gave way to warmer days. Within a week or two after Riley's killing, the bloodroot went to seed and the crowns of the tulip poplars burst into green. Bees hummed at violets. Moths fluttered clumsy, delicate wings through the breeze in the awakening understory. The woods were coming alive again. For Lake and Riley and all the thousands of other women whose lives were too ephemeral, may the woods come alive again.
Author and journalist Holly Hayworth reading an excerpt from her piece, Woman in the Woods, a reflection on the safety of women. I'm Kim Drobes with WABE's City Lights.
I saw a girl, she's smiling. I noticed she is feeling free. I saw a girl, her name was me.
Goodbye, so long, farewell, all I'll be.
You just heard Alison Russell singing The Returner. I'm Lois Reitzes, joined by the Bitter Southerner co-founder Kyle Tibbs Jones.
Hi, Lois.
Hey. Kyle, we mentioned this a few minutes ago, but I'm still amazed that you were able to get Joan Baez for this issue.
Lois, I'm floored. I'm floored still. We are very excited to publish Goodbye to the Black and White Ball. It's a glorious poem that tracks Joan's life through the decades.
Hi, this is Joan Baez, and this poem is called Goodbye to the Black and White Ball. I used to think the alternative to black and white must be gray, and to avoid living a dull life, I dressed in black and white. I thought in black and white, not just good or bad, mind you, but perfect or damned, gifted or worthless, ethereal or demonic, emblazoned or cast out. I scoffed at anything average and avoided the middle ground, you know, the gray area. As a result, I let slip most of my life. I was chronically anxious, insomniac, promiscuous, multiphobic, depressed, hypervigilant, and luckily, immensely talented. I had antennae that could turn corners ahead of me to protect me from the mortal danger of, say, eating dinner in a restaurant or making a new friend, you know, the gray area. When I was half a century old, I tore off the antennae and turned my life over to a power greater than myself, which by that point could have been a toothpick. I pitched myself into a sea of memories and headed blindly, like a hoodwinked shark, for the marrow of the inner core me. I pictured pustules of venom, but my therapist suggested it might be diamonds. For months, I thrashed about, recording dreams, grasping for clues, fighting for the life of my son, fighting for my life. When I came up for air from my flailing, I began to see shards of color. Slowly, I began to see my life was sanctified, matchless, and I would trade it for no other. I should not have been shocked to find that a diamond was, in fact, the core of me. I continued to scrape off tenacious parasites, discover that sorrow is an ocean, fury is blue, pain is my companion, but love had not been smashed to bits so badly as to not be mendable, like a gypsy violin crushed beneath a Nazi boot. I needed patience and an artisan. My therapists became my artisans. People around me unearthed the gems I had been promised and held my heart in their cradling hands. As I split up into 100 pieces, 100 bright souls, sorting out their places in a dazzling necklace, taking in and reflecting sunlight, working to mend me, to help me survive my deliverance and transcend my survival. Speaking indirectly about the poem, it does fall in the category of women and our struggles. It's coming out of some childhood abuse. And so, and that kind of abuse is mostly about women. And that when I became aware of my childhood through different kinds of therapy, the poem just says exactly what happened. That I was thrashing around to find the memories that would explain to me what went wrong in my life. So part of that is about little girls. So in a way, I'm advocating for women because of that, because the traumas that they've had, somebody has to advocate for that. There were thoughts I had about women and performing, and I was thinking about my mom when somebody asked the other day, would you get your voice from your mother or your father? And I might have gotten it from my mom, but when I looked back, she was still living in the Stone Age, the women's Stone Age, and if she'd wanted to do anything, any of these things, she wouldn't have been able to. She had no encouragement and no money. No, it didn't even come up as a possibility. My mom was a housewife, and she raised 3 daughters, and she was a nurse's aide at one point. That's how far she moved out of the family circle. So now I think we reflect on the Stone Age and that we're still coming out of it. And what are the gems that were promised?
Hi, this is Roxanne Gay, reading an excerpt from The New Pornographers, my essay from the Bitter Southerners All Women issue. The New Pornographers. Here are some of the TikTok rabbit holes I've tumbled down, pleasurably wasting hours and hours of time. I regret nothing. The influencers, yes, with their perfect makeup and strategic camera angles and professional lighting, all to make their lives seem enviable while narrating their days in a strange monotone. They show off massive homes with the house numbers and the font of gentrification. They travel around the world, mostly in first or business class, discussing their enjoyment of champagne and caviar and perfectly cooked fish and sumptuous desserts. They review hotels and lie out on beautiful beaches overlooking crystalline waters. They adventure and ride camels and visit rainforests. The world for these TikTokers is an abundant oyster from which they pluck pearls of audience engagement. There is a young woman, Nara Smith, who is a model and influencer married to a model and influencer named Lucky Blue Smith. They are zygotes, relatively speaking, and already have 4 children, one from Lucky's previous marriage. Though they rarely say it, they are Mormon, and there are a lot of similar influencers on TikTok. I am chagrined to know this, and yet, most days, Nara makes videos speaking in that ubiquitous monotone people on the platform use as she makes the most ludicrous things from scratch. She makes her own marshmallows and Turkish pizza and granola and mozzarella cheese. She can make Snickers bars from scratch and ice cream and also chewing gum. Clearly, she is doing this in part to mess with her very large audience, who often express bewilderment, admiration, and/or disdain as she appears in her perfectly appointed kitchen and starts cooking while wearing a lacy evening gown or other outfit that is not conducive to cooking. She is selling an enviable lifestyle, one where she is unencumbered by how the dishes are washed or who is tending to the children while she makes her videos, one where the particulars of her financial situation are inscrutable as she surrounds herself with the trappings of conspicuous consumption. Don't get me started on Ballerina Farm, but it's a whole thing. Families with 10 or more children, often evangelical, who own innumerable coordinated outfits and think quite highly of themselves even though they are never doing much of anything on camera. Parents sharing a day in the life, sometimes with medically complex children. Throuples sharing a day in the life. Pet owners sharing a day in the life. People getting ready to go out for a night on the town or to a birthday party or work. Couples sharing in precise detail what they're wearing, from underwear to the scent of the day. Makeup artists offering tutorials or showing off their skills. People sharing what they eat every day or doing meal prep for the week. Estheticians and dermatologists cleaning pores and pulling viscera from body cavities. Hairdressers and barbers performing their services on a range of people, from weekly clients to people who haven't washed their hair in months or years and need a little care and tenderness to undo the damage. Doctors and nurses offering medical advice or dancing or sharing what a shift is like or making fun of annoying patients, which, I'll admit, doesn't always inspire a lot of confidence in the medical establishment. Comedians go for the laugh, sometimes making a joke, sometimes responding to another video, sometimes offering a pointed look at the camera while something else happens in the background. Once a comedian finds something that works, they tend to do the thing over and over and over, so much so that it leaves you wondering, is this all there is? There are so many viral dances. So many. These dances are usually created by Black creators and end up as memes that Kansas grandmothers and everyone else try to mimic to great or not so great effect. And there are the many, many niche communities. So many. Women who pack lunch for their husbands and detail everything, including the silverware and napkins. The quantity of food these men take to work is staggering, in case you were wondering. Housewives with a yen for organization and clear plastic storage goods, as in, you can watch videos of people bringing groceries home, emptying their refrigerators, cleaning them, and refilling their refrigerators with everything neatly organized. People will remove things from one container only to place them in another with a neatly printed label. It's hypnotic but also deeply distressing when you start to think about the environmental impact. A very, very attractive farrier reshoeing horses. A guy who chops down trees for a living, making a lot of innuendos involving his mighty axe. Men in gray sweatpants thrusting their hips to highlight their assets. A masked chef cooking in the woods over a campfire, making everything from scratch and feeding scraps to his handsome dog. Home cooks and chefs preparing dishes, sometimes delectable, other times not so much. People setting up elaborate camps in the wilderness, or building elaborate homesteads using like a shovel, some dirt, some water, and a twig. There are the sick young women who narrate their bedtime routines involving sanitizing medical equipment, preparing solutions for feeding tubes, and self-administering their daily medications and vitamins. There are people on dialysis and in rehab for catastrophic limb injuries. There is a young man who is the caretaker for his 99-year-old great-grandmother. Every day, he gently lifts her out of bed so he can change the sheets, all while murmuring soft kindnesses to her. And then, of course, there are the memes. An endless stream of people doing what everyone else is doing. Hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of people worshiping at the altar of replication. Sometimes it's repeating a snippet of dialogue or a song playing to an inside joke. For weeks, people would lip-sync the line, "All that work and what did it get me?" from the musical Gypsy, with text over the video speaking to some unique irony from the person's life. or children asking their parents, dance or get back with my dad while Sexy Red's song Bow 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 is playing, or dance or get back with my mom while Chief Keef's F My Baby Mama is playing. I'll admit this is a favorite. The mothers always, always dance, vigorously. 9 times out of 10, the fathers look pensive and shuffle from foot to foot and choose not to dance. There's a lesson in there somewhere. The first few times, it's funny or interesting or charming. Then it becomes a little weird. I start to wonder just how many people are going to offer their variation on the theme of the day. TikTok is creative and sprawling and often strange and anarchic, which mirrors the internet more broadly. There are few rules. The platform takes all comers. Chaos is inevitable. You can find absolutely anything. It's incredible to witness how many different ways there are to be, how creative or uncreative people are, how we crave attention, hoping that if we make the perfect video, we might be catapulted to some version of fame. It's also haunting how so many of us yearn to be seen, to be understood.
You just heard author Roxane Gay read an excerpt from The New Pornographers, her essay in The Bitter Southerner's All Women issue. Elsewhere in the magazine, the cosmic Americana country music artist She Returns for More shares her experience of navigating the genre, industry, and world as a transgender woman. Here, she performs the title track of her most recent album, Ruthless.
Was uprooted, just like throwing water on a live wire. My constitution seemed to echo a queen who abandoned her empire. These seasons don't define, my dear, the dreadful parts that do appear to dwell upon the both of our sleep. These things in me that stay the course, so blinded by the vicious thought of you saying you wanted. I don't wanna come undone or find that I'm the one alone. I wanna be ruthless. I wanna be the very last thing they see. Not something as useless as the man that you say that you.
That was Hunter Park performing as She Returns from War with the song Ruthless. I'm Kim Drobes with WABE's City Lights, and this is the Bitter Southerner's All Women Radio Hour.
Listening to Ella Fitzgerald. Today we're joining with the Bitter Southerner to celebrate their All Women issue, an expansive look at the women artists, musicians, chefs, poets, and comedians whose work helps us imagine a better world. Co-founder Kyle Tibbs-Jones joins me alongside City Lights producers Kim Drobes and Summer Evans. Kyle, I know that every issue of The Bitter Southerner begins with a letter from home. Tell us about why you selected Toni Tipton Martin for this issue.
Well, first I have to say that that letter from home is really beautiful real estate in the magazine. It's the first thing you read. It sets the tone for the magazine. Jimmy Carter has written the letter from home. Ann Patchett, Alice Walker. I mean, we've had some amazing people write that letter. And we chose Toni Tipton Martin because, well, A, she is a grand dame of the food world. She's the queen. We love her so much. But she kicks off this issue with a letter from home that's also an ode to the Black women who've taught our country to cook. Toni has a pretty renowned cookbook collection in her home, and it's beloved to her. And that's what this letter is about for her. It is about, you know, usually the letter from home is related to what is home, what makes home. And in this issue, what is home for so many women? Well, the women in those cookbooks is home for Toni.
I love the name of Toni Tipton Martin's book, Juke Joints, Jazz Clubs, and Juice, a cocktail recipe book, cocktails from two centuries of African-American cookbooks. This is Toni Tipton Martin reading her recipe for a cucumber Collins.
This recipe is a take on the cocktail that was made years ago by muddling cucumbers in order to release their flavorful juices. There was a time when mixologists experimented with all kinds of vegetables, herbs, and fruits in order to bring variety to cocktails. Cucumber Collins. The standard Tom Collins combines gin, lemon or lime juice, and carbonated water in a tall cylindrical glass. The cooling summertime libation is an ideal option for exploring the various flavors that master distillers rely upon to make their gins unique. Sometimes I like Old Tom Gin for its smooth, mild juniper notes, but in this lovely cocktail, a more fragrant gin really shows off when combined with lemon juice and the melon-like notes of cucumber. I could not resist fidgeting with the cucumber splash in the cookbook Melba's American Comfort, so as to up my Collins game. Melba Wilson is the owner of the iconic Harlem restaurant Melba's and is the creator of a fried chicken recipe that won Bobby Flay's Throwdown competition on his Food Network television program. In her 2021 book, Melba muddles a thick slice of cucumber in the bottom of a cocktail shaker, then adds Hendrick's gin, elderflower liqueur, and lemon juice. The elderflower's floral undertones take the place of sugar or simple syrup. It's a perfect foil for the aromatic gin, which is infused with rose and cucumber. I also love this drink with Mejor gin, a delicate Spanish spirit distilled from Mediterranean figs, rosemary, and orange botanicals. For my version, I upped the gin, lemon, and soda for more punch and a more refreshing effervescence. The recipe: 1 1/2-inch thick slice of peeled cucumber, 2 ounces or 1/4 cup gin of your choice, preferably Hendrick's or Mayor, 1 ounce or 2 tablespoons of Saint Germain elderflower liqueur, 2 tablespoons fresh lemon juice, ice cubes, crushed ice, 1/2 cup lemon-flavored sparkling water, 1 lemon twist, 1 long, thin strip of cucumber made with a vegetable peeler. In a cocktail shaker, muddle the thick cucumber slice until juicy. Add the gin liqueur and the lemon juice. Fill with ice cubes and shake hard for 10 seconds to mix well. Fill a Collins glass halfway with crushed ice. Strain the gin mixture into the glass and top off with the sparkling water. Garnish with the lemon twist and cucumber slice.
Hi, this is Sabrina Aura Mark, reading The Things We Carry, my essay from the Bitter Southerner's All Women issue. She wasn't there. It was her brother who was there, and it was her brother who told her the story. It follows her, this story. Over the years, the story has grown a long white beard. She tries to comb it, and it blurs. For nearly 30 years, she has been failing to tell the story about the shoe, how in 1996, her brother, Ari, along with 5,000 other high school students, marched from Auschwitz to Birkenau, and on the trip, Ari met a boy whose last name was Moore, or was it Moorstein, or any Moore, or Unmoored. She is not even sure of the boy's name, and so in her head she just calls the boy Moore. As a proud marcher, says the March of the Living website, your experience will be in direct contrast to the tragic fate of hundreds of thousands of Jews and others who were forced by the Nazis to take part in the infamous death marches across vast expanses of European terrain under the harshest of conditions. This time, however, there will be a difference. It will be a march of the living among thousands marching shoulder to shoulder. The march from Auschwitz to Birkenau is a little over 2 miles. Ari's shoulder and Moore's shoulder, she imagines, never touched. Not even once. She goes upstairs and vacuums her son's bedrooms. She doesn't write the story. A small mole, the same color as the shoe, appears under her left eye. She doesn't write the story, although it's possible the story has begun to write her. Remember this story you told me about the boy who stole the shoe from Auschwitz? Here we go again, says her brother. Every few years she asks her brother to tell her the story about Moore and the shoe, and whether he thinks Moore took the shoe all the way back with him to New York City and shoved it in his closet behind a skateboard and a pile of dirty laundry. He just grabbed the shoe from a mountain of shoes, shoved it into his pocket, and then carried it through Poland, her brother says. Like an inheritance? She asks. Maybe, or more like something that once belonged to him, like something he had lost long ago and now he had found. His father was a rabbi, says Ari. He was a good kid. He didn't know why he did it. He was a mess over it. You will spend the first week in Poland, says the March of the Living website, traveling around the country, searching for traces of a world that no longer exists. But Moore did find a trace, and he pocketed it. The story decays, returns to the soil in her brain, enriches it, but still nothing grows. Must this story she keeps failing to write stay unwritten to honor the child who, according to history, must stay dead? No, she decides. She must find some way to write it. But instead of writing the story, she designs a course on how to write stories that refuse to be written. And after she designs the course, she goes to the supermarket, wanders the aisles, and leaves with nothing. And now, comedian Lace Larrabee. In issue 8, Lace describes the shifting industry in her hometown of Atlanta and discusses the limits placed on women in comedy. A former beauty queen and America's Got Talent semifinalist, Lace is known for her bold storytelling through a distinct Southern lens.
He was cheating on me, and I had found the most recent one. He had 3 months of evidence in his phone. He didn't delete anything. And what I could have done is I could have confronted him in the middle of the night, right? But it had been 6 years, you know? So I needed to collect all the information so I could do it the next day at his job in public. So it's much easier now, okay? Because now we have AirDrop. You can just send that over real quick. It's not what I had to do, though. I had to do the old scroll screenshot, right? So you got to do that. You got to go through. You got to collect all the evidence. Scroll screenshot, scroll screenshot, scroll screenshot. Then you got to text yourself the screenshot of the text messages that you found out of his phone, right? But you got to cover your tracks. Go into the photo album, delete the screenshots of the text messages that you already took on his phone. Go to the conversation between the two of you. Delete the screenshots of the text messages that you already texted to yourself. Don't forget the deleted album. Go in there. Delete all the screenshots of the text messages that you already deleted out of the album and out of the text messages. And I just bring this up to tell y'all how good it feels to be in a healthier place.
That was comedian Lace Larrabee from her stand-up special, White Trash Cinderella. Before Lace, writer Sabrina Ora Mark read from her piece, The Things We Carry, from the All Women issue. Next is poet and writer Victoria Chang orating her poem, Grass 1967, originally published in her book, With My Back to the World, Poems, a collection inspired by the work of Agnes Martin.
Grass, 1967. When I open the door, I smile and wave to people who only have eyes who are infinitely joyful. I see my children, but only the backs of their heads. When they turn around, I don't recognize them. They once had mouths, but now only have eyes. I want to leave the room, but when I do, I am outside and everyone else is inside. So next time, I open the door and stay inside, but then everyone is outside. Agnes said that solitude and freedom are the same. My solitude is like the grass. I become so aware of its presence that it too begins to feel like an audience. Sometimes my solitude grabs my phone and takes a selfie, posts it somewhere for others to see and like. Sometimes people comment on how beautiful my solitude is, and sometimes my solitude replies with a heart. It begins to follow the accounts of solitudes that are half its age. What if my solitude is depressed? What if even my solitude doesn't want to be alone? And now, Nashville singer-songwriter Maddie Diaz. Maddie is featured in Issue 8 as one of the unstoppable women of Nashville for her powerful and layered songwriting that dives into the, quote, paradox of beauty and the complexities of modern female identity. Here she performs Don't Do Me Good from Weird Faith.
Without the better days, the one step closer face, who on earth would I be? Without the sleepless nights, when I turn out the lights, would you recognize me? It's getting harder and harder to breathe underwater, and I know that you'll take me down. Every time I try to walk away, I stay. You knew I would. I know loving you, it don't do me good. And every time I wake up crying, I'm denying what I should. I know loving you, it don't do me good. It don't do me good. It don't do me good. It don't do me good.
Maddie Diaz performing her song, Don't Do Me Good. Thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, here's City Lights' Lois Reitzes and co-founder of The Bitter Southerner, Kyle Tibbs Jones, to close out the hour and share what else you can find in the All Women issue.
Kyle, it's been such a privilege to be immersed in your print world. And I thank you for letting us be a part of The Bitter Southerner's All Women issue.
Lois, I cannot think of another woman I'd rather sit here and just do a deep dive into these stories. Like, I'm so honored to have been with you today. And let's do more.
I'm down.
Maybe we'll wait a year. No, I really, really appreciate it. Our team appreciates it. Thank you to WABE for sharing this issue and all these great stories and important stories. I want to make it clear that this issue, the all-women issue, is for all of us. And by all of us, I mean man, woman, and all the genders. This is for everyone. So thank you so much for elevating this and sharing it with the world. We appreciate y'all so much.
It's been a joy.
The Bitter Southerners All Women Radio Hour is produced by WABE in Atlanta.
Springtime of my present tense.
Springtime of my present tense.